The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
This is a, you know, sort of cheap talk to get around the fundamental problem, which is the bipartisan commission chaired by Jimmy Carter and James Baker said back in 2009 that mail-in voting is fraught with the risk of fraud and coercion.
But since then,
they haven't proved it. Let me talk.
Yeah, please.
Since that time, there have been in the newspapers, in networks, academic studies saying it is open to fraud and coercion. The only time the narrative changed is after this administration came in. But elections that have been held with mail have found substantial fraud and coercion. For example, we indicted someone in Texas, 1,700 ballots collected from people who could vote. He made them out and voted for the person he wanted to. Okay?
Because
that kind of thing happens with mail-in ballots, and everyone knows it.
So much going on. You see a full-scale invasion coming into the United States from the South. So why would we lead the first show of the week? Why lead with a three-year-old clip from someone who, well, really, he betrayed his country? I think you'll see how it ties in with what we have here in this first segment. We'll get into it here in just a minute or two. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. Just go to trumpetdaily.com to watch the live stream at our website, or you can go over to Rumble and look for the Trumpet Daily channel there and watch the live stream at Rumble. And of course, both sites can give you the shows after the fact as well if you choose to listen or view on demand. The email address, td@thetrumpet.com. So before the bad orange man came along, as Bill Barr rightly points out, back in 2020, just a few weeks before they stole the election, before Donald Trump came along, both sides agreed that if you open it up to mass mail-in balloting, if that's how you vote for president or whatever, it's just going to open things up for a massive amount of fraud. A bipartisan commission, as he noted there, 2009, headed up by Jimmy Carter. They all agreed. And then, as Barr explained there to Wolf Blitzer, the narrative changed. As soon as Donald Trump showed up, the narrative changed. And we could go back and play, the RNC posts these montages all the time of Democrats who, number one, questioned the election in 2016. I think it goes on for 24 minutes. They denied the results of the 2016 election because the bad orange man won. Now they blot out the so-called election deniers. But together with that, you could play the 20 or 30 minute montage of all of these Democrats saying just how vulnerable something like the machines are, how they're hackable, how they've had studies that have shown, whether it's the machines or in this case, the mail-in ballots. Just pick your subject with respect to how they stole the election. They did it in so many different ways, as we've noted on this program, time and time again. And of course, it's all laid out in this book, America Under Attack. Heritage Foundation, they've been celebrating their 50-year anniversary. Of course, you know all about Tucker Carlson, the keynote address that he gave that some say led to his firing at Fox News. He's just too religious, I guess, for the Murdoch family. Whatever the reason, though, we just came across, it was at Citizen Free Press over the weekend, but there was another important speech, just 10 minutes or so, at that celebration. I guess it was a two-day event back in April 21, 22, so about 2.5-3 weeks ago. But the Attorney General of Texas, his name is Ken Paxton, and according to his opening remarks, he said that they invited him in to speak about election fraud. And, of course, he proceeds to talk about the 2020 election. And he has a pretty unique perspective, being an AG in a big state, a big red state. A big red state, remember that the radical left said, I think it's swinging. I think it's swinging in the direction of blue. I think Beto O'Rourke, I think he has a chance to beat out Ted Cruz or whatever it was they were saying years ago. Well, it didn't happen. It didn't happen in 2020, and it didn't happen in large part because Ken Paxton fought against the movement to just send out millions and millions of mail-in ballots because of, well, COVID. COVID changed everything. So here is Paxton describing what happened in Texas in the lead up to the 2020 presidential race, clip 11.
What happened during COVID, and it happened in my state, and I want to tell you that story because I think we were able to stop what other states didn't see or didn't try to stop. We ended up having judges in about 12 different counties basically ignore our state law and say, no, because of COVID, we're not going to follow state law. And by the way, these were all very liberal counties. This was Travis County, which is Austin, Harris County, which is Houston, Bexar County, which is San Antonio. They decided they would just mail out ballots to everyone. Well, that means in Harris County, we're talking about close to 2.5 million ballots. In Travis County, over 1 million ballots. In Bexar County, over 1 million ballots. Donald Trump won our state by 620,000 votes. And so we realized that we had a huge issue. We had 12 lawsuits, all in the worst counties, all with judges that were going to rule against us, including the Court of Appeals in each area. And all I could do was say, wow, what a genius strategy by whoever put this together, whether it was George Soros or somebody else. Somebody thought this up because it was too well organized.
Somebody thought this up, he says. It was just too well organized. He says, whether it's Soros or what. Of course, America Under Attack tells you that it was Barack Hussein Obama. He said himself back in 2008 when he was campaigning the first time how important it was to control the machines. Remember the comment he made to that lady in Ohio? He said that, well, one good thing about Ohio is that we control the machines. He knows how important it is to control the election process. So COVID comes along, and keep in mind, COVID was manufactured. COVID is a bioweapon. Okay, you can argue about who released it, what the motives were for China, but there's a lot of communists in the deep state as well. And you can be sure, I mean, Trump came along in 2015 and 16, and every other sentence, it seemed, when he was campaigning was something with China in it. The horrible trade imbalance and how that we've got to get a better trade deal. China wanted him out. Just like the deep state in Washington, D.C., the swamp. And so they used COVID. And COVID had its variations and some of those early images coming out from Italy. I mean, it was shocking. And it did kill people. There's no doubt about it. But it was made by human beings. And then Fauci, for his part, said it's 10 times more deadly than the flu. That's what he said early on in 2020. A complete and total lie. 10 times more deadly. So everyone was scared into the basement, including the presidential candidate running against Donald Trump. I mean, you can't make this up. It all happened. I know you remember. It was just a few years ago. And then you hear Biden out there talking about, you know, how he has more wisdom and knowledge than just about everybody. It's unbelievable what's playing out. The reason you've got to keep going back to the election steal is because, as Steve Bannon likes to say, stolen elections have catastrophic consequences. And so that's what we see playing out with the cartels running into Texas, shooting people, running people over. All of this traces back to 2020. All of it's part of the fundamental transformation. Barack Obama's calling the shots. And here's Ken Paxton saying, I was stunned by how organized this was. You know, you can watch 2,000 Mules. That's just the final step in the process. So you see all the footage. Dinesh D'Souza, together with True the Vote, they put together a really good documentary documenting all of the theft in all of these swing state districts. But if you're not careful, it's easy to just focus in on the mule. I mean, it's even in the title, the 2,000 mules, and not see the organization behind it. Organized. Just like they organize those protests that kill people. Of course, those protesters, they get off scot-free. If they're from Antifa or BLM, they get off scot. Name, you had the Proud Boys last week. Name one high-profile lawsuit or case of an Antifa member going off to prison for 20 years. You can't name one. Because they were all given a slap on the wrist and then let out of jail the next day. Not so for the Proud Boys. Now, the Proud Boys, what a precedent this sets. As Jack Smith, he's going to go after Donald Trump next. Julie Kelly's she's the only one that's even covering all this. The travesty of justice for these Proud Boys and their families, as she said. She's making the rounds saying, look, Jack Smith is going to use this now as a pretext to go after, guess who? The bad orange man. And she says, don't be surprised if he aims for pretrial detention. Donald Trump, in other words, sitting in jail while he's waiting for a trial. This is what they did with the Proud Boys. This is what they did with all the January 6th protesters, the ones they went after anyway. Catastrophic consequences. That's what we're seeing. All this lawfare playing out and courts, judges, radical judges sending people to prison for walking through Congress for 24 minutes in the case of the 56-year-old woman from Iowa. Yeah, put her in prison. Now, I'm not going to do it for 3 months. We're going to do it for 5 months. Paxton couldn't believe how organized this was back in 2020. Now, listen to what my father writes in AUA. It says here, as a number of reports, statistical analyses, documentaries, and other sources have established, the 2020 presidential election was plagued by voter fraud. It was organized. It was organized. It was extensive. It was extreme, defiant, and flagrant. And there was someone behind it who had the power, motive, and gall to commit the greatest electoral steal in history. It was not Joe Biden, but he knows exactly who it was. What was worth committing such treason for? The main goal was to restore to power the political machinery of Barack Hussein Obama. His world was jolted in 2016. And so he had 4 years. Even with COVID, I mean, go back and you see Obama in 2017, just days before he left office, giving these crazies like Anthony Fauci more leeway when it comes to gain-of-function research. And then Fauci, for his part, he's out there saying, right at the start of Trump's presidency, there will be a global pandemic in the next 4 years. In other words, during Trump's presidency. How did he know? How did he know? And then when it does finally come, we find out later it was man-made. So there was Fauci in 2017 telling the world that a global pandemic would come at some time during Trump's presidency, and lo and behold, it came from Wuhan, you know, where Fauci's people were helping and funding the operation. If people continue on thinking that everything's above board, with all that we know now about lockdowns, vaccines, even the timing of COVID, I mean, it's true. President Trump caved in to Big Pharma and Fauci, the administrative state. Fauci and his people were pretty much running the show for months and months there in 2020. But then we come up to the election, and remember, they told us. Remember Axios and the New York Times basically saying, now, don't get your hopes up on election night if you're a Trump supporter. The red will be in the lead, but just give it some time. Election day suddenly turned into election week. Had never happened. Ken Paxton at this Heritage Foundation lecture, he said, it never happened in my lifetime, turning election day into election week. It says here, this is AUA, thousands of people and institutions were directly or indirectly involved. Virtually all of America's top media organizations and personalities were complicit as well as the powerful tech companies and many of the nation's top politicians. See, they were all in on it. You had the regime media. As soon as they anointed Biden as the fake president, then they immediately went on the attack against those who would dare question the results. Listen, there was mass mail-in balloting, but Chris Krebs says it was perfect. Everything worked perfectly. Gabe Sterling down in Georgia, yeah, everything worked perfectly. Sure, Trump wins by 9% in 2016, 9 points. And then he loses Georgia just 4 years later when across the country he had gained, what, 11 million votes? How do you explain this, these statistical anomalies? That's just one. There's dozens of them. It says here, but this vast network of lies, corruption, and lawlessness all points back to one man, Barack Hussein Obama. See, this is who organized it. And Ken Paxton saw enough to know, hey, this was highly organized. Listen to what he went on to say in this speech a couple weeks ago, clip 12.
If the ballots go out, the genie's out of the bottle and we lose. Game over. Texas legislature very likely turns Democrat. Some of the Supreme Court members, four of them are up. We lose 4 of the 9. We're in trouble. And very likely Donald Trump loses the election. So I called the president in May and I said, hey, you need to know this. I said, I don't have time to deal with other states, but very likely you've got a very good chance of losing Texas by mail-in ballot. He goes, there's no way I lose Texas. I won by 9 points. I said, yes. But if they have a chance to mail out all these ballots, and I said, I've got 12 cases, if I don't win every single one of them, I have a feeling you will lose. If Harris County can send out 2.5 million ballots, they will just count ballots until they get to the right number. Because when those ballots get mailed out, we don't know who sends them in because there's no signature verification. Anybody can sign those ballots. They can grab as many of them as they want, send them in, claim that they're legitimate, and we can't prove that they're not.
So I didn't play all of the clips. Or I could have gotten more, I guess I should say. But just to set that up a little bit more, COVID was happening. There were definite and very strict state laws restricting how many mail-in ballots could be distributed. You know, you had to be elderly, sick. You had to have proof that you were going to be out of town or out of state. So just a few, in other words. You can vote by mail-in, but then there used to be standards with that. At least you had signature verification, which, as Paxton explained in the speech, that was out the window. It's not perfect, but at least there's something. There's something. But when COVID happened, Harris County, that's where Houston is, they're known for corruption down there, for rigging elections locally over and again. But never mind any of that. Just send out 2.5 million mail-in ballots. Anybody can sign it. You have no way of proving that it's fraud because they're just out there by the millions. So no photo ID, no signature verification. Anybody and their dog can sign off. And that's what you saw in Dinesh D'Souza's documentary. And D'Souza just focused in on, you know, Georgia and Arizona. He didn't go down to Harris, Texas. Or Harris County, I should say. In any event, Paxton says there he had 12 lawsuits going against 12 Democrat counties to stop them from mass mailing ballots to everyone. And really, he didn't use the word miracle, but he said, we had to win all 12 of those cases in Democrat districts. And they came up with a novel idea to try to get it expedited so it could get up to the Texas Supreme Court as quick as possible. And it did. And he ends up winning all 12. And lo and behold, Donald Trump wins the state by 9 points, just as he did in 2016. You see how it's impossible. It's impossible for a basement candidate who's half senile to win a presidential, to win 81 million votes. I'll get to the latest polls on him in just a second. But coming back to America Under Attack, it says God was using President Trump, but leftists stole the election, and he has been politically exiled. And of course, you could add to that, they want to put him in prison as part of the exile. It says, and none of these terribly guilty elites are being prosecuted, much less convicted or imprisoned, because even many of the prosecutors and the judges are corrupt. Paxton explained at the Heritage Foundation event. that there have been a lot of rulings coming out from courts saying that you can't even go after them when you have proof they cheated. It says here, that was the way things work, or that's the way things work in the swamp. They have the power and the control. How can you win against that? How can you win if they rig the election itself? They had 4 years to think about, to plan for the next election, to make sure you get rid of the bad orange man. Keep in mind what Bill Barr said there at the top from that exchange 3 years ago. I mean, I know now he's a totally different man. He's been compromised. He became part of the steal by not examining Hunter's laptop, by not going after the Biden crime family. In any event, what he said before the election, he sure made a lot of sense with respect to mail-in balloting. He said that before Trump came along, there was bipartisan agreement that mail-in balloting en masse exposes you to cheating on a mass scale. Listen again to what Ken Paxton had to say a couple weeks ago, clip 13.
I said, the reason I'm calling you is not to tell you about the trouble I have in Texas. The reason I'm calling you is because I'm worried that this is going on in other states. And so I can't deal with other states. I can't deal with wherever this is happening, but I'm guessing if it's happening in Texas, and it's such a significant strategy that I can plainly see in front of me, it's got to be happening nationwide.
Now, I said in the previous clip that it was in May of 2020, so he warned Donald Trump, and Donald Trump just kind of dismissed it, that, oh, Texas, no problem, I won by 9 points. But Paxton said, look, if we don't win these 12 cases, they're going to be manufacturing ballots in Houston, San Antonio, Austin, and you may lose Texas. He was sounding the alarm. Not enough people listened to him. The other thing that's great about this attorney general is he fought it ahead of time, quite unlike many of the other states, certainly not the swing states. And then some of them started, and he was even part of the fight after the fact, after they stole it. You know, all those cases that even got as far as the Supreme Court but were dismissed because of standing or whatever. It was too late. If more people would have fought like this attorney general did back in May of 2020, see, it wouldn't have happened. Now, again, God could have easily tweaked it in one direction or the other. So God allowed this. God allowed this steal to happen. He allowed President Trump to go off into exile, as my father explains in AUA. But it goes back to the election steal. In all of these catastrophes we're seeing around us. Now, I will say as an aside, over the weekend, quite a lot of news on the coronation of King Charles III. Hopefully we'll have time. Sam's got a montage he's put together on just some of the highlights of that ceremony, which had its moments of beauty and power. But again, when you see what's happening to the family itself, the royal family, the words just kind of ring hollow. The crown seems hollow, as Shakespeare said in one of his plays. We'll get to that if we have time. One more quote from, or clip from Ken Paxton. This is number 14.
And so, what happened? On election day, I'm sitting there watching the election results, and for the first time in my life, election counting stopped in numerous states, particularly, obviously, battleground states. And it was very clear to me, I knew immediately what was going on, it was very clear to me that what they were doing. They were figuring out how many real votes they had, just like they would have done in Texas, and they were just going to count as many mail-in ballots, because you don't know where those mail-in ballots came from. There's no way to prove that they came from the person that supposedly signed it. And so when I saw what happened in all of these states, and I'll give you an example, Georgia. Georgia, if you go back 4 years prior to that election when Trump won, the margin of victory in Georgia was the same as it was in Texas, almost exactly, same demographics. This time, Trump won by almost 9% in Texas. And he lost Georgia by whatever it was, 40,000 votes? 12,000. How did that happen? Well, guess what? They decided to sign a consent decree that said that they would accept mail-in ballots with no signature verification, mail-in ballots that weren't following state law, and drop boxes. I can tell you what's going to happen when that happens. You're going to lose, because there's no ballot security for those votes.
Georgia had all the Republicans in place, but they were rhinos, right? Governor Kemp, you had Gabe Sterling, Jeff, I forget his last name, he was presiding over the election process. They didn't fight it. They just let Stacey Abrams, who was doing Barack Obama's bidding, throw the laws of the state. How elections are to be run. That was all out the window. Mass ballots were mailed. No signature verification, photo ID, nothing. Anybody could sign it. Anybody could sign 10, 20, 30 of them. And as Dinesh D'Souza's movie brings out, they were getting paid $10, $15 a pop. So again, you can focus in on the mules, but what about the organization, the system behind it? No wonder they go into full-scale panic mode when a state legislature comes out with just a medium-sized standard with respect to the election process. This is from Democracy Docket regarding Texas. Again, because there's so many people that get away with cheating in counties like Harris County, where Houston is. So I think it's the fourth most populated county in the country. What happens when you just send out 2.5 million ballots to everybody? It's like a third world banana republic. That's what happens. It says here on Tuesday, May 2nd, this is last week, the Texas Senate passed Senate Bill 1993, which would give the Secretary of State the authority to order a new election under certain circumstances. I mean, this is how you deal with rampant fraud. You have a redo. Well, look, let's clean it up and we'll do it again. Democrats despise these sorts of movements. They panic when they see these kinds of things happen. It says SB 1993 would allow the Secretary of State to order a new election in Harris County if at least 2% of polling places ran out of usable ballots during voting hours, and also if these polling places don't receive extra ballots within 1 hour of running out. So if you're going to pull off those kinds of shenanigans like they did in Arizona with the Kerry Lake election, then we're going to get in there and clean it. Listen to this radical communist in Congress. His name is Daniel Goldman. This is how he responded to this story out of Texas. This is a shockingly brazen attack on our free and fair elections, the very foundation of democracy. Elections must be decided by the voters, not politicians. You can't have a redo. That threatens democracy. The voters decide. In other words, the results in these areas where there's rampant cheating, you just have to move on. You have to move, just like they said after 2020. And of course, most people were too timid and cowardly to stand up against the cheating, the stealing, the lying. Just go back to 2020 again, that exchange between Bill Barr and Wolf Blitzer. Here, you've heard this before, I know, but listen again, clip 17.
Now what we're talking about is mailing them to everyone on the voter list when everyone knows those voter lists are inaccurate. People who should get them don't get them, which is what has been one of the major complaints in states that have tried this in municipal elections. And people who get them are not the right people. They're people who have replaced the previous occupant, and they can make them out. And sometimes multiple ballots come to the same address with a whole several generations of occupants. Do you think that's a way to run a vote?
That's exactly the way they ran it in 2020. Just a few weeks after he said that. I mean, you see Barr, he's a little hot under the collar. You think that's how we can have a fair election, Wolf? Well, they did it. And Axios and the New York Times, they prepared us for the steal. And then they told Time Magazine after the fact, they basically explained how they stole it. They brag about it. But don't you dare question it. Otherwise, you're going to be blotted out. That's what led to January 6th, that kind of talk. That's why they're going off to the slammer, those people. Too dangerous. Election deniers are dangerous. We'll come to January 6th here in just a second. One point in passing on Mr. Barr there. Listen to what he said over the weekend regarding Donald Trump. Clip 8.
Is Donald Trump, a lot of my friends say, okay, he's made mistakes, and okay, January 6th, and okay, this and that. It is his policies that we'd be voting for. given that pragmatic side also, do you think he is emotionally fit to be president of the United States?
Which is, if you believe in his policies, he's the what he's advertising is his policies, he's the last person who could actually execute them and achieve them. He does not have the discipline. He does not have the ability for strategic thinking and linear thinking or setting priorities or how to get things done in the system. It is a horror show when he's left to his own devices. And so you may want his policies, but Trump will not deliver Trump policies. He will deliver chaos and, if anything, lead to a backlash that will set his policies much further back than they otherwise would be.
There you go. A broken, pathetic man who's betrayed his country. He's a traitor, along with all the others. And going on about, notice he said that Trump can't get things done in the system. He can't get his policies through in the system. You've got to submit to the system. Well, Bill Barr certainly does now. He's all in. He's now, he dove headfirst into the swamp, and he's quite happy to be back in the administrative state or back out promoting his book or whatever it is he's trying to promote. That's a leave aside the betrayal. Look at the difference between those clips. Look at the difference between Bill Barr today and Bill Barr a few weeks before the election in 2020. Pretty sad to see. Here's Bill Barr in 2020. One last clip from him, clip 18.
Well, this is playing with fire. This is playing with fire. We're a very closely divided country here. And if people have to have confidence in the results of the election and the legitimacy of the government, and people trying to change the rules to this methodology, which as a matter of logic is very open to fraud and coercion, is reckless and dangerous. And the people are playing with fire.
He was right. He was right. They were playing with fire back then. And Republicans, like the officials in Georgia, they were intimidated into inaction and silence after the fact. And so they let him get away with it. Pure and simple. Now, the thing about this book, America Under Attack, is it connects all of the dots. I'm trying to do that, I guess, in a way here with just this one segment. But if you go back and look at before Trump, BT, you go before Trump, and they were in agreement, both sides. Mass mail-in balloting leads to fraud. A 2009 election commission agreed on it. Jimmy Carter agrees. This is America Under Attack. It says, very importantly, drastic government actions made possible only by coronavirus fears revolutionized elections in America. This is how you know COVID was a bioweapon attack, because they couldn't have stole the election without these mass changes, without the election process being revolutionized. Never had it happened in my lifetime, said Ken Paxton. Never. It says here, the push for mail-in balloting and other loosening of or illegally breaking longstanding election standards that protect against fraud could only have happened by heavily marketed virus fears. You see all the scaremongering. You see why, I should say. All the scaremongering. I mean, I went back and looked at my notes from March 11, March 12. I think it was March 11 is when it was declared a global pandemic. So the UN, they were on board with it. And then Trump, for his part, what was it, the following Monday, he got up there and said, just 15 days to stop the spread. That's probably some history he's not very proud of. Just kind of stepping aside and letting Burks and Fauci control or run the country for 7, 8, 9 months. They had to keep it going through the election. They had to keep it going so that they could revolutionize the process. And behind closed doors, they were basically throwing the rules out the window in places like Harris County. And to his credit, Paxton fought it. And he won all 12 of those cases before the election. And Trump ends up winning by 9 points, just like he did 4 years before, just like he did in Georgia 4 years before. But not so in Georgia this time around. Isn't that amazing? We're supposed to just believe everything was above board. No cheating at all. So they get COVID in place. COVID allows them to revolutionize the election process. They turn election day into election week, and they prepped us for this ahead of time, like I said, with the Axios story and so on. They said now it's going to take a while to count, and particularly in certain areas. And then wouldn't you know it, just as Ken Paxton reminded us of, on election night, it wasn't across the country. It was just 5 or 6 states that stopped counting, if you can believe it. They stopped counting, and as soon as they did, as Paxton brings out, he knew what was going on. They got to go. They want to get a count. Okay, we're 600,000-700,000 behind in Pennsylvania. That tells us how many more ballots we've got to process, how many more ballots we've got to harvest. So they turn election day into election week, and then there's an outcry. There's Rudy Giuliani and others saying, come on now, there's cheating. We've got thousands of affidavits, all of these people that are testifying that they witnessed cheating. So to stamp that out, and the regime media worked overtime to stamp that out in November and December of 2020. And then it all culminates in January 6th, and they had to manufacture an insurrection to stop the investigation into the election. And once the Fedsurrection happens, CNN and all of them, of course, were right on board with it, even Fox News, a lot of Republicans. Once that happened, well, as America Under Attack explains, the few Republicans that were crying out for investigation into the corruption, they just shut their mouths and moved on. AUA says this, to cover up their stolen election and certify their treacherous coup, the radicals had to commit more treason. That's why the January 6th protest included a ton of FBI informants and also radical leftists and even FBI agitators. They wanted to use that protest to cover their treason. You see all the dots here connected. If you don't have a copy of America Under Attack, make sure you call our operators today and request your free copy, 1-866-930-3024. They did it to cover up their treason. Radicals stole the 2020 election, then instigated the uglier aspects of January 6th, then overreacted to the protest to discredit it and to block all opposition to certifying the stolen election. It says their plan worked perfectly. Those 100 members of Congress and the vice president, that would be Pence, caved in. The plan, the organized plan to steal the election. What did Paxton say there at the start? I couldn't believe how organized this was. I called the president to warn him. If they're doing it in Harris County, they're probably doing it in the swing states as well. Their plan worked perfectly. One last clip here from Attorney General Ken Paxton, clip 15.
If you do not take care of election integrity, if we do not in our own states focus on protecting, and this is a strategy that isn't going away for the left, they're going to continue to try to steal elections. And I know it's controversial to say it, and somehow they get to cheat, and I'm just telling you, there's lots of voter fraud going on. We have proof of it. And don't let people make you feel stupid for bringing up the obvious, which, why can't we, if you're so sure there's no voter fraud, make sure that you vote with a photo ID, that mail-in ballot is more secure. Why would anybody that cares about fair and free elections in a democracy actually criticize you for wanting to protect your elections?
And they go on about how signature verification or photo ID, it's discriminatory. Paxton noted at the beginning of his lecture that he needs a photo ID to get into a hotel or to reserve his room. He needs it to rent a car. You need it to get on a plane. Everybody does. But if everybody needs that to vote, that's discriminatory? That discriminates against black people? Are you for real? A lot of people think that. A lot of people say that. They say it with a straight face. They know. They know they can't cheat if you have to actually provide proof that you're the one doing the voting. They know they can't cheat unless the mail-in ballots are out there by the millions, just circulating about. And like Bill Barr said, in those cases where people resort to that, you know, the ones that need the ballot, they don't get it oftentimes. Others, they have 3, 4, 5 ballots showing up at the same mailing address, even deceased people. And again, I won't take you back through all of the dead people who voted, that people in nursing homes that couldn't even basically think for themselves. Cheating right across the board. And as I say, when you look at the catastrophic conditions in the country, particularly in the southern border, as about a million illegals line up to storm the country as soon as Title 42 is lifted. Again, you go back to the stolen election. Stolen elections have catastrophic consequences. The nation is in a free fall. The Biden presidency's in a free fall. As everyone noted over the weekend, listen to this montage. And these are, again, this is regime media. They're panicking about Trump being ahead by 7 points in a general election over Biden, who supposedly won 81 million votes just a little over 2 years ago. This is clip one.
Our brand new poll conducted with the Washington Post, it shows major challenges for President Biden. His approval ratings at 36%, a career low. More Americans now say Donald Trump did a better job handling the economy, and Trump is leading Biden in a 2024 matchup.
Pretty stark numbers there. Do Biden and Trump have the mental sharpness to serve? 32% of the American people say Biden does not. 32% say he has the mental sharpness. 63% says he does not. There's me not being so sharp this morning. And then Donald Trump, 54% say, yes, he is sharp enough to be president. 43% say no. Karen, that is, you know, that's not a good number for President Biden. 2/3 of the American people say he's not sharp enough to be president.
Donna, I can only imagine what it's like inside the White House now looking at the numbers in our poll coming out this morning.
George, I was told I could not send the poll around to after 12 midnight. I sent it out at 12:02. Because it kept me up, and I thought they should wake up and look at those numbers. You know what's sobering? It's not the age. Look, I want to be 80 plus just so I can hang out with you. And let me just tell you, I'm going to have my hair, my teeth, and a bottle of wine, so come hang out with me when I'm 80.
I'm ready,
all
Tom.
Right? And I'll even play a round of golf. But it's sobering in the sense, George, that the coalition that elected Joe Biden with the historic numbers that we saw in 2020, that coalition right now is fragmented. That should concern them. The second thing that should concern them, of course, is that they are still unable to get a real good, strong message to the American people, not just on their accomplishments, but where they want to take the country.
Just one of the big challenges he faces now, more revealed by our brand new poll. Political Director Rick Klein here to break it down. And Rick, this poll is just brutal for President Biden.
Absolutely, George. And you talked earlier about that record low approval rating for President Biden. It's actually 6 points down just since February. And the skepticism over his leadership extends deep inside his own party. Only 36% of Democrats think that their party should nominate Joe Biden for a second term. 58% say they would support someone else or prefer someone else. That's despite the fact that the entire DNC and most of the Democratic establishment has rallied behind President Biden. And you're seeing real weaknesses in the coalition that powered Joe Biden to the presidency back in 2020. Biden carried independents by 13 points against Donald Trump. He is now trailing Trump by 9 points among those same voters. He carried black voters by 75 points in 2020. Now he is up just 35. That may sound like a lot, but the fact of the matter is, in modern politics, that is not the kind of number that a Democrat needs to be victorious. And then, of course, that does spill over into the head-to-head matchup, the hypothetical rematch, Trump versus Biden. Right now, a 7-point edge in our poll from in Trump leading Biden.
See why they're trying to put Trump in prison? 7 points. And these are polls. These are polls that always favor Democrats. they always tilt in the direction of the Democrats. But not so this time. It shows how that Trump's on the way to a landslide victory. It's about the only way that he can win, as he's even explained himself. This is from D.C. Drano. He tweeted, we had a mass shooting, just going back to this illegitimate presidency and the causes, the catastrophic consequences of a stolen election. He says here, we had a mass shooting by a cartel member in Brownsville. They say he's a white supremacist, by the way. Just ridiculous. Another likely cartel member run over and kill illegal aliens. It's horrific scenes. Seven people dying because of this car wreck. Says the, and hundreds of thousands of illegal aliens waiting to invade our country all in the same week. America is under attack. America is under attack, he says. And Joe Biden is doing nothing to stop it. Nothing. He's just out there talking about how gifted he is. Skip ahead to clip five. This is with Stephanie Ruhle. She asked him about, you know, his age. He's going to be 82 by the time he runs for the second term. And notice his reaction. He was prepped for this, I'm sure, going in. And notice his response. Clip five.
There's not a Fortune 500 company in the world looking to hire a CEO in his 80s. So why would an 82-year-old Joe Biden be the right person for the most important job in the world?
Because I have acquired a hell of a lot of wisdom. I know more than the vast majority of people. I'm more experienced than anybody who's ever run for the office. And I think I've proven myself to be honorable as well as also effective.
He knows more than the vast majority of people. This was his prepared response. He's wise. He has understanding. And he knows more than you. It made me think of the 2008 article back when he ran for president. Can Joe Biden save the world? Jill Helicker wrote that, and he had an exchange with CNN. He said here, Candy Crowley, she asked bluntly, can Joe Biden save the world? Yes, he said, without hesitation. Of course I can save the world. Look at what's happening to the world. Look at what's happening to the United States. Well, instead of going off to a promo at the moment, I think the montage we have, we should have time to at least give you a summarization of the coronation of King Charles III that happened on Saturday. And, of course, we had a lot to say about it on Friday's program. And there's a lot more that we could say, and I think Richard Palmer is going to address it or talk about it in his trumpet brief later today. So I'll direct you to that. For now, but here's a synopsis of what transpired over several hours, actually, in the ceremony on Saturday. Go ahead with the montage.
All matters and the chapter, the governing body of Westminster Abbey, standing by there to welcome the King and Queen. His Majesty King Charles III, arriving at Westminster Abbey on his coronation day. The gentlemen at arms, leading the way in for the crown itself, St. Edward's crown, with the orb and scepter.
Your Majesty, as children of the Kingdom of God, we welcome you in the name of the King of Kings.
In his name and after his example, I come not to be served, but to serve.
I here present unto you King Charles, your undoubted king. Wherefore, all you who are come this day to do your homage and service, are you willing to do the same? God save King Charles.
The church established by law, whose settlement you will swear to maintain, is committed to the true profession of the gospel, and in so doing, will seek to foster an environment in which peoples of all faiths and beliefs may live freely. The coronation oath has stood for centuries and is enshrined in law. Are you willing to take the oath?
I am willing.
Will you solemnly promise and swear to govern the peoples of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, your other realms and the territories to any of them belonging or pertaining, according to their respective laws and customs?
I solemnly promise so to do.
We are here to crown a king, and we crown a king to serve.
The Archbishop will anoint the king on his hands, breast, and head, just as Solomon was anointed by Zadok the priest. The biblical text that was set to this triumphant music by Handel. The Anglican Archbishop of Armagh will present the orb, representing the sovereign's power under the cross of Christ.
Receive this orb, set under the cross, and remember always that the kingdoms of this world are become the kingdom of our God and of his Christ. Receive the royal scepter, the ensign of kingly power and justice. And the rod of equity and mercy, a symbol of covenant and peace.
The moment of crowning has arrived. In the chair of St. Edward, with the crown of St. Edward, King Charles III is acclaimed.
And Lord of Lords, bless, we beseech thee, this crown. God save the King!
God save the King!
Some powerful moments still left in the ceremony. After 70 years, going back to his mother's coronation in 1953. I mean, anytime you hear about the King of Kings and the royal law of God, I mean, and then knowing how many eyeballs are fixed on this ceremony. But the sad reality is that the people uttering these phrases, biblical phrases, they don't really believe them. They don't teach them. They don't defend them. This is from American Spectator. He makes the point that besides all the pageantry and even the royalty or the royal law that's underpinning the ceremony, that what this king actually believes in is quite peculiar. Climate change, homeopathy, Islam, etc. That's from the Spectator. I mentioned last week on the show the new throne of David. Make sure that you call our operators and request that book as well. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.